Hello, ladies and gentlemen, to the Archaeologist Digest podcast, a show where we discuss everything and anything that has to do with Ark Survival Evolved. I am your host, Sean D. Knight, and with me are a number of players that are here to offer their insights and opinions on the latest topics, strategies, and upcoming features or patches. As I call out our participants for tonight, say hello to the listeners and how many hours you have in Ark. First up, Pillars.
Hello, I have 3,275 hours in Ark.
Leg Day joining us on the smartphone.
About 1,400 hours-ish.
Rico?
2962. How's it going, y'all?
And the almighty Trog.
Yep, coming at you once again tonight, y'all. 1,674. Climb on up there.
Yep, it is episode 6, and the topic for this week is one that has caused anguish for many ARK players, forcing some to quit the game altogether. But the few, the proud, the archaeologists, are the ones who stick around and rebuild when all is said and done. I am, of course, talking about offline raiding. Let's hear a round of applause for that topic.
My favorite.
I have a love hate with offline raiding.
Well,
I love it when it happens to someone else, hate it when it happens to me.
Well, throughout the various wars we've conducted where, you know, these are wars where the fight isn't
even
concluded, or even concluded within a few hours, but takes days, we have resorted to pretty much offline raiding our enemies when they haven't been on. But, you know, it's war. Anything goes, right?
Mm-hmm. All fair in love and war.
So I guess our listeners will want to know, what's the difference between offline raiding during a war and then just offline raiding a tribe out of the blue?
Well, to me, the distinction, I've always drawn two distinctions when it comes to offline raiding. The first is whether or not you put any consideration to it whatsoever. During wars, we don't tend to, most of the time during a war, we don't care if when we get there, the enemy's there or not. If they're there, we're going to have a fight. If not, we're not going to war, you know, for the Keks or for whatever. It's because the person is a threat to our goals. It's that simple. Now, the other kind is when you're like, we'll get into a bit later, when you are on the extreme defensive footing, when you have almost nothing left, you have to plan to encounter as few enemies as possible, even just to do a minor raid to bleed off a few of their dinosaurs.
Just like General Washington.
Indeed. During the Bastardus War, Faction Black, and PETA, we always issued a statement prior to us attacking them from the get-go.
Well, not the Bastardo War.
We didn't start that one.
We didn't start the fire.
We didn't start the fire.
Well, there's a difference between a surprise attack and an offline raid, too, right?
Right. You know, when we feel here in Frozen Throne that if we're the superior force, but these guys or our potential enemies are talking about hitting us in some way or form, and we get proof, we give them a small window of opportunity to prepare, and we hit them when they're online, because we wanted to be as fair of a fight for our opponents, which most of the time they wouldn't have done for us. But we also like to fight. Let's be honest here. Yeah, so Faction Black, PETA, we gave them warning, whereas Nomad, we were not on an even foot. In fact, we were what we thought were way behind the self-proclaimed Alpha Tribe of 732.
Oh yeah, they were just swearing up and down that they had wyverns, and we thought for sure that they did.
We still gave them warning before launching the attack, although in this case it was about, I don't know, what, 5 minutes?
Sort of, like, yeah. I was typing
out the Declaration of War as I was being flown over the mountain to airdrop onto their base.
I was a little bit closer to that. We were chucking grenades by the time they got that little...
Well, it was a 4-paragraph thing that I had to copy-paste.
Which we can read in the video. But we hit them when they had the least amount of players on. Now, yeah go ahead, Truck.
Like, yeah, and the sad thing is that only one of them really fought, if you want to call it that.
Yeah,
the leader himself actually ran.
Yeah, which was pretty funny to see. All right, so let's talk about some of our experiences with offline raiding. Now, Rico, Trog, you pretty much have a really bad history with this because of the DEA and your original tribe, Pepper's Farms.
Yes, back when I ran Pepper's Farms. I'm not sure if anyone else heard about these guys called DEA, who like to infiltrate large tribes and take them over. But I ran to this guy. He said that he had skills. At the time, I was taking in new people that just showed up on the beach, because that's just how I brought people in my tribe.
Give them
a chance to build up. Yep. That's how I found Rico. But we were even joking with this guy the night before, just laughing, having a good time. And wake up the next morning and find that he had declaimed all the dinos and used most of the explosives and stuff that we had started to build up to go and take out a huge suppository of metal and stuff on top of the Alpha Tribe at the time's mountain and just made a huge fortress.
They recycled our
there.
Entire base to build a fortress.
All of it.
Up there. 100%
of our base was torn down. The only thing they left us was a cooker, only because one of our members got on the night and kicked the person.
Yeah, and it took pretty much the entire server, all the power tribes on the server, to finally dislodge them.
And for a bunch of, and at the time, we had been in all of, it, I wouldn't even say wars, I mean, we've been in basically two fights. We were the designated neutral tribe at the time. When we were fighting, who was it, the Masons, I think? Masons.
Jason's.
When they started about us in global, and, you know, everyone's like, Beast is raiding them, because at the time we were just friends with Beast because of a mutual friend, because a friend of mine who was the leader of Beast. When I said something, they said, wait, Pepperidge Farms is involved? Oh, well, you guys must deserve it. And just went on their, and everybody else just went on their day.
Indeed.
It was a good reputation we had.
Yeah. But, the DEA, they infiltrated, and, I mean, we were a bunch of farmers, and, you know, our dinosaurs
it's
didn't
in the name.
Have any intended builds to them. We just usually pumped their health to make sure that they would live and gave them whatever else stats we thought they needed to do what they were doing, and yet our dinosaurs, granted out of our control, devastated the air cores of pretty much every tribe on the server.
Yeah. We had a huge Brontosaurus, Big Bama, I think it was called, right, Rico?
The original Big Bama.
Covered with turret guns, and followed by a Dimorphodon cloud, all the best birds started falling out of the sky when they had to try and bring him down.
Yeah, and pretty much you guys were farmers, forged in battle to become warriors.
Yes.
I spent that entire... I got on about, I'd say about two-thirds through the battle. I spent the entire time in Beast's base manufacturing explosives.
Yes, and I had to... he didn't really trust me much because of it was all my materials and my dinosaurs, and I was responsible for the tribe that gave them all this stuff. So for the entirety of the fight, he didn't actually want me to help with anything. I just sat there and had to listen to him basically belittle me.
And harp on it, and harp on it. Oof. All right, so Leg Day, you're a member of Seer, and you've had, unfortunately, many experiences with offline raiding, haven't you?
Yeah, well, a pretty well-known thing that there were certain hours that we were pretty active and certain hours we were not, and we were frequently offline raids about four times at a minimum. But I want to say there was actually two different styles of offline raids that we encountered. The one was what I called like the precision strike, the kind that I was actually pretty impressed about how well they pulled it off, where they managed to circumvent defenses, not kill any dinos, because this is back in the days where the only way you knew you were being offline raided or who did it was if they managed to kill a dino.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go through, take some valuables, but leave a lot of the equipment functioning behind. The second type was destroy everything, kill everything, and dump everything you couldn't carry. And
more
the second
malicious.
Type sucked. And those are the raids that really set us back. Yeah, exactly. What's also kind of interesting is how when they modified the logs to show damage and destruction, how that kind of changed the character of offline raiding a little bit. For a while, we were actually less concerned about it because we didn't think anyone wanted to pick a fight with us. And because once you were in the logs, you were an enemy. But the meta there changed pretty quickly once people figured out that you could just rename your tribe and make some alts. But offline raid, I want to say we never really came up with a viable defense against it because we were never able to quite build up enough automated defenses that would last until we came online.
Yeah.
Now, as for offline raiding ourselves, we never got in a situation where we did that. The worst we ever did was pick at the ruins of bases that were long abandoned. So I didn't really consider that an offline raiding, though technically it was because nobody was online.
During the Bastardos War, which we'll move into right now, that was kicked off because Bastardos, who was our ally at the time, offline raided us when no one was online, and they wiped out, I'd say 90-95% of our dinos.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I mean, we're talking about 30 to 40 Rexes.
Oh, we had more than that.
It was insane. And we were hit hard, and quite a few people were talking about maybe just giving up. But then, you know, a couple hours passed, and we're like, oh, we're not giving up. We're getting ready. We're gearing up now.
Well, technically speaking, I mean, everyone, you know, everyone's getting geared up to make the last stand because we had one base left that had just merged into us. And luckily, because there had briefly been a suspicion that we were going to raid them at some point, they had really geared up the defenses on their base, which ended up working out well for us all in the end. And what was it, about 3-4 hours after the initial raid is when I popped on, and about another 4 hours after that is when the Bastardos finally showed up with their second attack force.
Yeah.
So I get a message. You know, we're just scrambling around trying to figure out what materials we have access to, what dinosaurs we still have. Trying to sneak out of the base to farm because we were at the foot of the volcano, and at the top of the volcano was a Bastardo base.
Mm-hmm.
What was left of it after it got blown into?
We had very little. Well, no, I mean they had rebuilt that base by then. So we're literally under the shadow of our enemy. They have a vastly larger air core, and we know it. And we're just trying to. We're grasping at straws, just trying to come up with whatever we have that we can use to try and win this fight. Or at the very least, make them hurt.
Yeah. One of those strategies was kiting the first wild Giga on their server into their base to cause as much damage as possible.
I was so proud of that moment.
I was actually there for it, but I heard about it. And if they hadn't had a member on to show up, they likely would have lost their entire city to it.
But the beauty of it was we realized that their flyers were on. So we were trying, we were poking things to try and pull them out. And to where the Giga could get at them through a hole we had blown in a counterattack a few hours prior to encountering the Giga. So Crippler, after Sean loses one of our last Rexes because he encountered it in the wild, first Rex on the first Giga on the server, and we only knew it existed because it ate Sean.
Yeah, as I'm trying to transport vital supplies we need to, you know, make ammo and repairs to the base, I run into a wild Giga. I was like, what the. This it takes one bite out of me, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, it's got this slow effect, so I can't run, I can't do anything because I'm already weighed down. That was a bad day, but at least we got revenge for her.
Yeah. Crippler comes up with a brilliant idea. Hey, let's try and kite this thing. Well, we lost a good chunk of our remaining air core doing this. I was beginning to have serious doubts, but after a certain point when you've already lost more than you can afford to trying to do something, you have to just say,
yeah. Nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we're at the moment, and I finally have got it. You know, I'm literally between Crippler and I, we're figuring out we can't, you know, poke it with the birds or anything because they'll just die if we get anywhere near it. So I'm landing ahead of it, you know, putting one round in it, hopping back on just as it's almost got on top of me to eat me, because those things are, we had no idea how fast they were. And and we finally get it to the river. We're kiting it through the buildings of their bases, and it's just not doing anything for the longest time. And finally, I get it over to where we had busted through into their base, hoping that their auto turrets would be set to all targets and draw it in. Of course, they weren't. So Crippler and Groppler come over with one of the remaining Argents. Groppler's being dangled from it. I'm sitting there on a pterodon, just, you know, being the spotter. Snipes one of the Bastardo's farming dinosaurs, and it starts running. A bunch of them come running out, and they come pouring out of the hole down this little cliffside right to where the Giga is. And the same moment, we just see their entire air core fly up into the air. So, you know, my first thought, I told Groppler, take a pop shot at one of their war quetzals and get the hell back to base. Because our base was... I mean, it was a killing field. The base was our primary weapon against the Bastardos. It really was just a meat grinder for them to crash on.
Yeah.
And without anybody to hold their dinosaurs back at first. Of course, unfortunately, Yoda was on. He figured out what was going on, where it was going on, spawned to one of the war quetzals, and managed to pull back one of their war quetzals and a couple of pterodons. But it was a good half of their air core. Just right there.
Indeed. Yeah, so as tribes, we've been offline raided. As a solo player, I've experienced being raided a lot. It got to the point where I was being raided 3 times a week for a couple months. So that I was essentially the server's doorknob. Every tribe got a turn.
It really changes your playstyle.
It really does. I would just log in the next day, see the damage done, see all my dinos killed, everything destroyed. And my first thing is, well... All right, let's see what I should prioritize first. Roll the sleeves, get to work. But we decided to talk about this particular topic because Frozen Throne just was recently offline raided. And this is due to the Scorched Earth DLC that's out right now, because this raid involved flame arrows and a couple high-level poison wyverns. We lost my imprinted Rexes. I imprinted 5 Rexes simultaneously, so a lot of work into that went down the drain because of it. Fair amount of our egg layers. We lost some more Brontos, a couple Gigas, and quite a few of the dinos that were outside and not protected by a building at all for the most part.
Yeah, really annoying.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, but it could have been worse.
It could have been worse. I mean, they lost their dinos to the interior defenses of the base, so that's a plus.
Yeah, some wyverns can't even make it away from a few turrets without exploding in blood.
So the thing is, though, I think the damage could have been a lot less if more of the dinos had been on neutral, which was one of our biggest downfall when it came to the Bastardus War, because they offline raided us, and the entire base was passive. All the dinos were passive. So they had hours to just quickly go through everything and kill everything because all the dinos had been whistle passive the night before. And this is one of the tips we, any solo player, small tribe, large tribe, you got to keep your dinos or at least some of your dinos on neutral to fight while you're offline.
Unfortunately, it brings up the never ending debate, because if you leave the ones that are left on neutral, someone can just, you know, if they blow down your door, they can just start pegging the stuff that's on neutral with sniper rifle, drawing it out one at a time and in a line and just nomming it all to death.
That was exactly how we were offline raided the first time, is our dinos were getting kited out one at a time. And I was hunting dinos for like a day trying to collect them all back up. They were all over the map.
So what I do is I have certain select dinos that I'll put on neutral. And when I put them on neutral, I have them fall on another dino that's on passive. So even if somebody tries to kite them out, they're only going to go a certain distance and then come back.
That is the key.
Leash mechanics win, devs. You promised it.
Yeah, I would like to see a leash mechanic of some kind where we can place a border or barrier where they can't pass and just go back or just stop. You know, another thing I want to see the devs include is some kind of warning system when your base is being attacked by somebody, sent to your phone or sent to your email.
Well, they kind of half implemented that. It's not exactly what I wanted, but they do have the triple on them. And I've tried to test this. In fact, during one of the Bohu raids, I tried to get this thing working. However, it actually never actually successfully sent me the text message. I only knew about it because I heard the ringing.
Yeah. Yeah, I only heard the ring too. I never got a text message either. And that was when I was using it while we were getting hit by those DDoS and mercenaries. And rather than the enemy hit setting them off, I had, who was it? I think it was either May or Data trip went off, so I quickly turned around ready to shoot them. I was like, wait a minute, why did you do it? And then you set off the other one. And I almost shot you too.
Well, look, you scared me. You put down these traps that make noises and I wasn't expecting it, so you're mostly at fault too.
I wish you didn't set off your own traps. I mean, that's something I know it takes away the realism, all that stuff, but it'd just be so more convenient.
Because we have we have narcotic traps, we have the IEDs, we have bear traps, all these that can be used to slow down raiders.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess we should have taken the light step perk.
But so interior defenses are very important as well, not just out exterior, because eventually, no matter what, if you're being offline raided, it's guaranteed that they're going to get inside your base unless they're exceptionally incompetent. It doesn't take a genius to offline raid a tribe or a base of any kind.
Yep.
No.
You know, it just takes the right tools, patience, and cunning for the most part. But there are ways to really slow it down, and that's what you have to design your base when you got to keep that in mind when you design a base, how to slow down an offline raid to the point where someone will finally get on to do something about it in time.
If you got the resources, I mean, some of them are kind of obvious, right? But, you know, you want overlapping firing lines, you want double power plants, just redundancy throughout the entire thing. I mean, since we didn't have a lot of resources for guns in my tribe, we used to do a lot of fake passageways, obviously the double doors, a lot of tricks like that.
Double doors, double ceilings, double walls.
You want to make it as expensive as possible to get into your base. So we used to like to say that whoever raided our base would have to pay more money to get in than what they were going to get out of it.
Exactly.
If you're not getting anything out of the raid, there's no point in doing it.
If anybody saw my base over at the Green Obelisk, there's a video on YouTube. You'll see that I designed it especially for that in mind. Just make the attacker or the raider pay for it as much as possible in resources, times, and dinos.
Yeah. A lot of people get power trips for being able to complete a offline raid when anyone can do it.
And I'd even say the recent addition of adding logging of specific turrets is going to make defending it a little bit better, because you'll see some of the activity of people trying to test your defenses and respond accordingly.
I wish we'd had the being able to name our auto turrets just even a few weeks ago, because we would have seen one of the guys who attacked us, Moo 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 Moo, blah blah blah, whatever. Yeah, that.
I believe it's
scouting the iceberg, because that's the base that was hit. Now, all our remaining dinos we've dispersed to other bases at the moment, because I'm going to have to redesign the iceberg. They came through the ceiling, which I knew was the weakest point of that. So now I'm shoring it up. I'm redesigning interiors. I'm making sure I've got more interior auto turrets, but I've also been growing more Plan X's. I'm going to have select certain kinds of dinos set on neutral and fallen others to respond to any attackers who break in. I'm starting to import vultures from Scorched Earth for defensive purposes as well. We're starting to like the vultures from Scorched Earth, right?
Oh, yeah.
Another thing I want to try and do is implement thorny dragons because of that spike of theirs, which will knock guys out if they hit them. I want to see how effective that could be.
I would love to see how practical that defense is. That would be pretty cool if it worked well.
Yeah.
I love dinos as an actual defense element, you know, rather than having to rely on mechanical things like turrets.
Exactly. I mean, I also supplemented with Dilos because of their spit. It tends to blind you and it slows you down. You know, people knock the dilos, but they're pretty useful if you use them in combination with other dinos.
Yeah. People are going to be so surprised to see my rock golems in the swamp.
Yeah, rock golems. I mean, they've got that turret. You put them in turret mode. Same with the centipedes, right?
You disguise them as a rock. And then when someone passes, it'll hit like a wild one. I just don't think it loses aggro once it sees you.
Yeah. So what are some other tips and tricks you guys might have for our listeners out there who might be getting offline rated constantly and things like that?
Some diversity in the tribe. Get some different countries, people from different countries, time zones, whatnot.
Going back to a point I was talking about earlier about making it expensive, though, I would say multiple vaults, even if you only need one. Spread stuff out and it keeps them empty vaults, you know, make because vaults are kind of expensive, or at least in early game, to blow up. Make them pay and they you might as well, right? You got nothing to lose. And by the way, vaults make pretty good walls.
Yeah, they do.
And it may seem like a stupid thing to talk about, but no use having a metal roof or metal walls if your foundations are still made of wood or stone.
Yes.
Because I've seen buildings that are mostly metal on the roof and on the walls, but they still had wooden foundations. I could hatchet my way into there in like 2 minutes.
I remember when I first started playing Ark and I was with a couple guys. We had finally built our first metal door, but they placed it on, I think it was either a wooden or a stone foundation. I said, yes. And I asked because I wasn't familiar with the game. They've been playing a couple days longer than I had. Can't they destroy the stone foundation? Like, yeah, but they're not going to because we have a metal door. I don't think that's how it works. And sure enough, the next day, they blew into underneath the foundation. They didn't bother to go with the door. If the foundation goes, the door goes.
Yep, I had a friend who wanted to make a wooden or a metal door on a old wooden house. And I had to tell him, well, why are we starting with there? If you're going to metal anything, why don't you metalize the doorway? Because if they destroy the doorway, the door is just going to fall down anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we always started with those doors.
Yeah, you got to work on your foundation first. Once you get the foundations down, then start working on the walls and ceilings.
At least the outer foundations, yeah, because they have to go through there.
Right, where the wall is, make them at the very least the metal foundations that they're on. Interior, you can take your time over time converting your base to metal if you have to.
We also used to do a little facading on our old base. We'd put like some metal foundation down and put some stone in front of it to kind of hide the fact that there was metal. Now, I don't really know how effective it was, but our vision was that they'd start attacking the stone thinking it'd be an easy target, see the metal, and then assume that the entire base was facaded like that, even though it really wasn't. It was only what we could afford at the time, you know, the most critical entry points.
That's pretty much what I did, because the last time I was raided, I built a small, what I call the black box, in the very interior of my base, where it was a dino gate with a, I think it was a 3x2, and I put my Argent in there. I put my one Sabertooth to protect him. It was just pure metal, painted black, inside a stone base, stone structure, that I just slept in like I was Will Smith in the Last Man on Earth, where he's sleeping in the tub. I felt like that in my little black box every night I logged off.
Okay.
Fun times, right? But nobody likes offline raiding. It's not fun. We prefer to fight head-to-head with people.
Most of the time.
I think, The least fun aspect, though, for me, again, I've kind of already talked on it, though, was just not knowing who did it. It used to drive me crazy.
Yes.
We wanted a rival. We wanted an enemy to have fun with attacking and get revenge. But we never really got that opportunity because it just our stuff would be gone and there'd be absolutely no record of how.
Yeah, and those people are, you know, cowards. They're the ones who want to do whatever they want but not pay for it or have anybody come after them. Well,
we
now
actually resorted to attack dodos to try to
yes.
force log entries.
But, yeah, I mean, now we're able to see who destroys a building or destroys a structure, which finally got implemented.
And I was skeptical of that. I mean, to be fair, I was one of the ones saying, I don't know if I really want that. That's going to change the dynamic. But having played with it for a few months now, I think it's pretty awesome. It really hasn't stopped offline raiding. It's helped you identify enemies to the point where you can try to bring up a fight. You know, there's still ways they can mask themselves if they really want to do it. So,
yeah.
Pros and cons.
The problem now is that because of this system, people are, you know, using alternate accounts to try and make sure that these things don't blow back onto their tribe or to their main accounts, which is really annoying.
No balls.
Yep. So let's talk about the implications of DLC dinos raiding the island, because we were hit by two high-level poison wyverns. They brought flame arrows, of course, and these things make a huge difference. And over the past couple of weeks, Scorched Island expansion has been one of the main topics of this podcast. So, yeah, for an extra $20, you're getting access to some pretty powerful stuff, right?
Yeah. You do. But, I mean, it almost gives some credence to the pay-to-win argument, but I still argue against it given the amount of effort it takes to get them.
Will you ever give in to pay-to-win?
Yeah.
The only problem
is
that,
right?
people can interact.
It's more like
with
pay-to-work.
That people, though, when they get to high level wyverns, they can still go and interact with the folks that don't have it. So
yeah,
it's kind of punishing the people.
It does open up a trading network.
Yeah,
it does,
I keep waiting
but
for that to happen. I'd like to see some economy based of importing goods from the Scorched Earth.
Yeah, but the problem is with that, nobody would want to trade these kinds of things because it gives them a power advantage over those who do not have the expansion or access to that stuff.
Or
rummagers.
How effective they are. Just willing to trade high-level wyverns, but I can't see why you wouldn't be willing to start selling some fertilized horny dragon eggs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or wyverns for gigas.
True.
True.
Now, if you have the manpower and resources to get yourself wyverns, I guarantee you've got the same kind of people with the dedication to get yourselves a giga.
Oh, so here's a question. What would you guys rather have, a high-level giga or a high-level wyvern?
I'd have to go with a wyvern because it would take out a giga pretty easily. Because you've got the mobility, you're in the air, whereas a giga can't do anything to you.
Until you run out of stamina for using your breath weapon.
Right.
And then
but you have to get close
to it.
The wyvern, or not the wyvern, the giga can take a hit if you have a good giga and a good settle. The wyvern
has an
settle.
Important thing to know, to remember about the gigas. You can, you know, as far as taming goes, you know, any one of our tribe can solo tame a giga.
Yeah.
It takes
anyone.
It takes a family or a tribe to raise a wyvern.
Exactly. It does not take anywhere near the manpower to get your hands on a giga that it does to get your hands on. Now, admittedly, you want a fully printed giga. That's even more effort than a freaking a wyvern, although it doesn't take so many people.
Yeah. I mean, imprinting them is a huge toll. I mean, Zach can tell us that. Doma could if he was on for tonight or for this week, but unfortunately he wasn't available.
Good.
Milk from Tamed Wyvern's Wind Devs.
Yes. Now, another problem that Scorched Earth gives is the fact that invasive tribes will have the ability to bring prefabricated structures from Scorched Earth to the island or to the center now, whereas for the most part they had to try and sneak into a server, build up quietly and be sneaky about it, and then when they were ready, all of a sudden you've got a big metal structure with 100 turrets on it up at Blue Obby or Carno Island or Herbivore Island.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can just do it more in relative safety at a Scorched Earth server and then come into an older server with an established alpha tribe to wipe them out.
Well, on our server, 732, there's a whole bunch of Chinese invaders, but our buddies, Hydration, are doing a pretty good job at taking care of them for us.
Oh, yeah, they're
in the server.
They're showing they can fight now. I really respect them.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to the tribes on each server to just work together to take out, you know, these invasive tribes.
But yeah, they're doing a really good job. I didn't mean to say for us. I want to help them, but we have all this stuff happening.
Yeah,
unfortunately, we're not in a position to help them any more than we are.
We've had a rough week since the last time we did the podcast from last week. I mean, we're still recovering from the DDoS and mercenaries. We're getting to a point where we can adequately defend ourselves. We're making headway.
One thing I'm kind of curious about is if on the other servers like ours, is it taking a while for a true Alpha tribe to establish itself, more so than maybe the center of the island? Since I wasn't around in the early days of the island, I really have nothing to compare it against.
Mm-hmm. The island, it was a lot easier for an Alpha tribe to become an Alpha tribe. All you needed were was really the manpower and the dedication. Scorched Earth, the Seems same like could still it. Apply, but it's a lot more difficult in many respects.
It's just harder to stay alive on the that server. When it comes to the center, with all of the bonuses to resource gathering and shit, it's no more less temperate than the island.
I mean, the center, I was able to get to level 80 within, what was it, not even 4 or 5 days, I was level 80.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was pretty
right
easy.
Right before they did the huge nerf on the Gigas, or not Gigas, but the Alphas, giving you experience, it was real easy to just fly out, have huge
and even
parties.
If you, if you have a Lystro, you still can pull off the same thing you used to be able to with the Alphas, so just have to be careful not to let it get eaten.
Indeed.
If you can get yourselves on a high-level Fire Wyvern, you can easily take out Alpha Wyverns.
Really? I thought Alpha Wyverns were mostly fire.
I'm guessing
they're only fire.
I'm guessing when it comes to the wild dragons, their preference is to try and use breath attacks, and the AI profile doesn't recognize that they're not working.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, question: When you're on the fire wyvern, and another fire wyvern or alpha breathes on you, are you immune to the damage? Because I know who the dinosaur is, but are you?
No. If the dino itself is hit, then yes, you'll start taking damage, but dino has to be hit first before your player does. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that's how it happens.
So it's still something you got to be aware of while you're trying to fight it.
I'm not sure if there's no damage. It may have like the initial damage, but I know there is no dot damage.
The dot's the real dangerous thing from fire right now, so.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I also learned that wyverns also scale with melee. I did not know that. But...
What? Really?
Fire would be very dangerous. Level two.
Make it easier to
kill. Have we ever been able to figure out if the dot scales with melee, though, or if it's just the initial impact?
I can't see the dot scaling. But we'll have to do more testing on that. Suffice to say, after this offline raid, minor inconvenience, really. And considering we've been offline raided by more competent players, shall we say, this is nothing.
I will give them this thing. They killed my mascot, so I'm going to feed them their intestines.
you lost a monkey.
Well, Sean, you and I were the first responders.
I lost a T-Rex.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
technically, they also managed to get my wolf herd.
I just realized at this moment I lost a dino. Thinking about it.
Oh.
Ah.
I mean, we've already repaired the damage. I've increased the exterior defenses. I'm going to rework the interior so that if they try again, they can't attack in the same way they did or go through the base the same way they did and find everything in the same place. Everything's going to be rearranged just to throw people off again. So I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to redoing it and raising some new dinos.
Just glad I enjoy taming.
The old ones are too old anyway.
They did clean up Iceberg a little bit for you guys, though. So.
Yeah, they did. I haven't had double digits for frame rates in a long time. But here's another tip for tribes, especially those who invest heavily in bloodlines. Have a seed vault. Have backups of your eggs, because if you get offline rated and you lose all your dinos, at least you have your eggs to bring back your bloodlines.
And spread your mammals out between multiple places.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket if it's possible. Alright, so that is it for episode 6 of the Archaeologist Digest podcast. Thank you to our participants this week, and thank you for listening and watching us on YouTube. If you liked what you heard, feel free to like and subscribe to the channel. So goodbye, and stay alive, survivors.
Stay thirsty.
Let's go raid.